land, a woman appears.
In every dream, I'm there.
She doesn't know why, but she remembered them.
Doctor, there's something wrong.
Whatever it is, here it comes.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to say welcome back for the very first time in quite a while. Quite a while means since episode number 150. Kirsty Bissett, how are you?
I am very good, and it's really good to be back. I see you've redecorated. I'm kind of partial to it.
I like it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wasn't the doctor's response you were expecting?
No.
Exactly. Love a good pun, feeling like we're going down Podshock Avenue. You know, Gallifreyan Embassy feels right here. But speaking of Podshock Avenue, Lee Shackelford, how are you?
Very well indeed. Glad to be with Dolly Yog. It's great to see you, Kirsty, again. And yeah. Well, I guess we worked on video last time, so yeah.
No, indeed.
It's all fancy in this place, I tell you.
No.
Back in my day, I had to do the count-in myself.
Exactly.
Now you have a video thing that does it for you. Now right. I feel like 60.
We also have to clean up our spaces before we go on, too. Used to have to do that.
This is what you call the Disney Plus Discussing Who budget.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we have the AR wall already. Ready
there
to
we
go.
Are. We're in the vision. Yeah.
Well, since we're talking different podcasts, I'm just going to find all my technology expeditions and trek over to Clarence Brown. Welcome back.
Hey, man. Glad to be here. As always, you know, such a great episode to talk about. And yeah, I believe this is going to be a great discussion. So can't wait.
Yes, indeed. I am so excited to be here. I can't wait to get into this. But before we get into it, I do want to give a quick shout out to someone by the name of Tad Davis. Tad commented on one of our episodes back from July 2022. This was when we were doing a get together, a catch up of an episode. We had taken a little hiatus. We were getting caught up. And Lee, he was really enjoying your story about meeting Brian Blessed. And he ends by saying, this is what lifts your podcast above the crowd. You three have a unique and wonderful chemistry. So, Tad, thank you very much. Highly appreciated.
That made my week, Tad. I'm just so pleased. So, yes.
Well, you get,
and I would say also to Tad, tennis balls, my lord. He gets it. Anyway.
Well, I promise you guys, unlike last stream, I'm not going to go off on a rant like I did last week, because I have mostly stayed off of social media over the last few days, and my disposition and my mindset is so much better. But I did do a Twitter poll, and I do have the results of that before we get started. 5 was 57%, 4, 36%, 3, 0%, and 1 to 2, only 7%. So overwhelmingly positive feelings, it seems, for this episode.
Yes, yes, I love the results of the very scientific study. Yeah,
indeed. Hey, it works for me. That's all that matters, right?
No, but I think that's a sentiment that I've heard around these parts as well. So yeah, I think this is a mostly loved episode.
All right. So I just want to not waste any time. I want to get into it. So that means I want to say, if you have not seen The Legend of Ruby Sunday, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
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 Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review The Legend of Ruby Sunday. This is the seventh episode of the 2024 series of Doctor Who, first airing / streaming on the 14th and 15th of June, 2024. It starred Shuti Gatwa as the 15th Doctor and Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday. So some review. Kirsty, I'm going to start with you. Some review. What say ye?
I just absolutely, well, first watch, absolutely loved it because I hadn't really seen much of the hubbub online, just a little bit of pictures scrolling by, and so had no idea, unlike some people, of what was to come. Some people had a good idea. I don't know. But yeah, it was really cool. Just able to just geek out on the couch and go, I know who it is. and yeah, so first off, great. Second time through, some things were a little long and some things were a little skimpy, but in general, I watched it just before we came on. This is the third or fourth time I've watched it now. Oh, wow. And I've also watched Pyramids of Mars again.
So, good deal. Clarence Brown, what say ye?
I enjoyed this episode. It was one with not a lot of set pieces. We were mainly in a few places in the episode. And it was a lot of talky-talky in this episode as well. But I credit to the scriptwriters because for me that all worked, you know. And we'll get into it, but some of the drama, the music, the tension that was built in some of the scenes and definitely the culmination to the end. I just feel like it was excellently produced and written and a fun story hooking into Who's past, which and we could talk about maybe how the revelation hit on people who may not know classic as much. So, but I enjoyed the episode.
All right. Lee Shackelford.
It's kind of a mixed bag. There were moments that I found really thrilling, really engaging. And then there are long moments where I was saying, and so I don't know. I found the pacing uneven, but you know, but as we were all told that one of the things that's going to be unique about this season is that we're not going to bring back any classic Who villains, and pulled the rug out from under us and did it anyway. And you know, and as a classic fan, I was like, Sutek! So, you know, I guess I'm pleased that it wasn't Daleks or Cybermen. But if you're going to reach back, Sutek, you know?
Yeah. Well,
Nicole and I had chatted about this during the week of saying, Omega must be next, you know? So that's right. Cool. Let's do it.
So I want to welcome everyone to the chat. I did not do that earlier, and I do want to bring up a quick comment from someone in the chat. Lei Jin said, I just started watching Pyramids of Mars to get some backstory. Yes. I am just trying to understand how or why they are weaving Ruby into that story. And of course, we'll get into that more as we progress. But for me, what did I think? And I've already said spoilers here, just going through my display for everyone listening in audio. But for me, I really enjoyed this episode. I love 15th. I love Ruby. I'm enjoying her. I love Kate Stewart. I love the dynamic there. We'll get into that. I just freaking love this episode. It was everything RTD that I like. And the more I see things hidden in plain sight after we know what they are, ticks all of the little check marks in my brain and makes me happy. And I went away happy. So let's talk about UNIT for a second. And my first question about Ruby and the Doctor is, why do you think the Doctor took Ruby to UNIT now rather than shortly after they met? Is this a coincidence just because they are there investigating the woman? Or why not take Ruby there at the very beginning? Lee, what do you think?
It's one of my problems with this, actually. And I don't know if next episode is going to tie it all up or what. But yeah, I was confused by that time frame, too. Has the Doctor needed persuading to look into Ruby's past? Because he said he's not going there in the TARDIS. So I don't know. But, you know, I got the same question about Susan Twist Triad
right.
as well. It's like, if this is supposed to have been teasing us towards Sutek, then why keep popping up in random places? So what's the purpose of that? It's not, and she's not always a menace. It's,
right.
I'm waiting for an explanation about that. It's like, if this is supposed to be something to come get the doctor, why didn't you do it a long time ago? So, you
know, all right.
But yeah.
Clarence, what do you think?
About bringing Ruby to unit so late?
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like the doctor always thinks he can figure it out himself. And this was like a last ditch effort to try to figure out what's going on with not only Ruby, but what's going on with Susan Triad as well. So I just feel like if it was a natural progression to me to make it there by the end of the season.
All right. Kirsty, what do you think?
Sorry, I distracted myself.
No, you're good. So why do you think the doctor took Ruby and Unit there now rather than earlier?
It's actually right there in the script when he gets there and he greets Rose and he says, "How's your uncle?" He's putting a bit of distance between himself and himself. He's freshly regenerated, and so he's having a bit of a he's been away from Unit for a bit, and so he's now only just bringing her over because at some point he might meet the uncle.
Which we will get to the uncle in just a moment. I want to bring in something that Nicole said. Yeah, the Ruby mystery timing was weird. To me, it felt like, oh, it's the finale, so we need to look into Ruby's origin. I can see that a little bit because it did feel a little bit like a game show, almost like, Ruby Sunday, come on down. You're the next contestant on This Is Your Life.
Yeah. Mm. And this really isn't a legend. You know, not to pick literary nits, but there's a thing that is a legend. This isn't one. It's like, it's the backstory of Ruby Sunday or something like that. But I don't know.
I think the doctor was more talking like, and for the two of them in general, this is like a tag on kind of, this is our side quest as well. We've seen this really weird woman show up. Oh,
yeah.
While we're here and we have the resources of Unit, we have another little mystery.
Yeah.
Here's our side quest. We're trying to figure out what's up with Ruby.
Yeah.
So let's go back to
that makes sense, but
let's go back to the other mystery, Susan Triad. Did any time in this episode, did either of you or any of you think that Susan Triad was really Susan Foreman?
No.
I have a no.
No.
I definitely thought that's where they was leading us, but it was almost too obvious. So, of course, they would pull the rug out from under us. But I do think we're going to get the revelation this season, hopefully. It was awesome to see kind of the emotional struggle that the doctor had to revisit some of his past, which he said is his future because he hasn't had kids yet. I don't know how that works.
Which brings up my next comment, which is, you know, this is kind of answering without answering, in my opinion, a longstanding Doctor Who question, which is, what about the doctor's children?
Yeah. It's only been 60 years.
We can right.
finally poke that bear. Yeah.
Does this canonize a potential, if she ever comes back, that actually that Ruby is actually River's granddaughter? I'm not Ruby. Susan is actually River's granddaughter? Possibly.
Possibly.
Because if he hasn't had children yet, maybe.
Yeah. Spinoff series, The Children of River Song.
I would watch it.
I would watch the hell out of that.
All right. So what do you guys, because I think, let me just say what I think of this first, and I want to get what you guys think. Did you like the fact that they take the anagram of TARDIS and spell it out to us at the very beginning, kind of as a nod to the audience? Kirsty, what did you think? Did you like that?
I thought that whole scene was brilliant because this is just another example, and we've had a couple of times now where the doctor is either pretending to be stupid and is really smart, and then it's just like, okay, fine, I'm smart. And then he's like pretending to be smart, and everybody's in the room going, yeah, we knew that. Yeah. I was like, that was so funny. I loved that. Just like, yeah, we figured that out. Thanks.
Well, and the flip of that, and 00 Inside has joined us in the chat, I think, for the first time. So welcome. Makes the observation that then we say this is actually an anagram for SUTEK. And 00 Inside's observation is that's not how anagrams work, Russell.
It's how chylograms work.
Let's take 10 letters out and swap the C and the K. That's not an anagram. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
Well, all I'm saying is there is a message in our private chat between the three of us, me, you, and Clarence, from the 9th of June, where I basically do that. So that translates into what? Kyle was right.
Kyle was right. I said before, that's not the first time.
Thank you, sir.
You keep saying that like it's a novelty.
Well, I will say a novelty, which is Lei Jin saying, never thought she was Susan at all. I think that's quite novel. And also Wingress says in regards to taking Ruby to UNIT, maybe after almost losing Ruby last episode sparked the need to take. I can see that.
Yeah.
What about the doctor ask Rose, how's your uncle? Because I loved him saying that. Clarence, what did you think of that comment? How's your uncle?
Now, didn't we get the statement that we're never going to see David Tennant again in Doctor Who? I think we're going to see David Tennant again. I'm almost like, how could they not show him again at some point? And I'm also just still puzzled by the fact of the bi-generation, you know, splitting him into two, if there wasn't a real purpose behind it. I guess I want to turn that question back around. Was there a purpose behind it? Is it just to have these off comments of David Tennant, you know, riding off into the sunset? Or what was the real draw to doing that?
If I remember correctly, and gentlemen, correct me if I'm, you know, tell me if I'm right, or guys, tell me if I'm wrong here, which is RTD wanted to have a multi-doctor story in the 60th anniversary, but didn't want to do what had already been done before, bringing back older doctors. He wanted to have the future doctor and the current doctor together in the 60th, and that was the bi-generation. I really liked about him saying, how's your uncle? There, the only way in my brain that 15 would know how's your uncle is the fact that it's what I think he eventually, the 14th, either rejoins or some, you know, that they are not separate beings. They are the continuation of the same, because I saw that more as a memory, because how else would 15 know that 14 said, you know, in that final scene of the 60th anniversary, that's where the uncle comment comes in. So,
yeah, I don't know if I follow that completely. Let me add to this.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yeah.
Well,
was it also a reason to split the TARDIS into two? One created off of magic / chance to have some type of infected TARDIS that is plaguing us this entire season. Does that play into it as well?
What do you guys think?
Actually, I've been wondering where got attached to the TARDIS. It's like it could be when the copy was made from the hammer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember any other significant moments where the TARDIS was in that vulnerable state where, like, you know.
Well, I actually...
There's a lot of unanswered questions for this Friday or Saturday, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
So that's actually something, and I was finding it in my notes just then. It said in Pyramids of Mars that SUTEK was trapped in the void. And we've referenced the void specifically in 2006 finale. So could it be that in the 2006 finale, when they were sucking back into the void all the Cybermen and Daleks, that it attached? Mm-hmm. I personally don't think so. I think it was in Wild Blue Yonder when he's at the edge of the universe, perhaps. Mm. That's also the first time we see the Susan Twist, Mrs. Meridew. So that's when I think it probably happened. All right, there is a comment that I want to bring up. that says 00 inside tenants. Dr. 14 is sitting on Donna's couch, sipping tea, watching news coverage of Sutekh destroy the entire Earth on television. Like, tough work shift for Rose today. Yeah.
I love that. It's like he should sit there. Well, oh, thank God I did that.
That was a good
one. Do the Times crossword good. Next.
Right. I'm sure they've got this.
Yes, indeed.
It's fine.
Well, that's the thing I know that I've always said in the different threat levels in the MCU, like I guess you know the rest of the big superheroes just taking a day off when we're we're watching like the Defenders and stuff like that, you know. Right. Like,
where the heck's Thor? Oh no,
you have to get Captain Marvel off planet just so she isn't the answer to everything.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. In the chat, Harold Katz says, if they're bringing Susan back, how are they going to bring her back from the 22nd century when they left her in the Dalek invasion?
I thought it was 1999. And the Dalek invasion. May not have been.
Now we got to watch Dalek invasion again in addition to Pyramids of Mars.
Mm. Or just Google it.
I just haven't seen Dalek invasion in a long time. But yeah. But anyway, to me, this is the big thing, is that with the kind of level of fan service, I mean, this episode has Mel in it, for heaven's sake, right?
Yeah, she was great.
And I loved her, yeah. She had a great opportunity to do that piercing scream, and she didn't do it. So, kudos. But it's funny language. But I just feel like it would be unconscionable in this way for anybody to turn out to be Susan and not be Carol Ann Ford.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
Carolyn Ford is still with us and has said many times she would love to be part of tying up this question of whether the Doctor's ever going to come back.
So on her, like
he said he would.
So I get every, and even reading it, I get chilled. And I promise you, I am going to be like shattered mad if something doesn't happen this Friday. But, mm-hmm. but every time there is a prediction for the finale that RTD said in the Doctor Who official podcast this last weekend. And he said, you know, if there's one thing that I could give you as something to look forward to, you know, he goes into his usual spiel about, you know, exciting things and great finale, but then ends by saying, but far away on a distant planet, a kind woman is waiting with something absolutely vital. I think that's Susan.
Well,
I think a kind woman is waiting.
Yeah.
Who's been waiting for 60 years?
For 60 years.
For somebody to come back.
Or, yeah, close to. Yeah.
That's what I think's going to happen. That kind woman is going to be Carol Ann Ford. That's what I think. That's what I hope. That's what I want.
And if so, they've managed to keep it a secret. But yeah.
Well,
and we know that
she did attend. Let me say this real quick. She did attend the premiere, and I just want to throw that in.
Ay, ay, ay.
So
I did not know that. Hmm.
So FYI. And speaking of Tad Davis, hello, Tad. Mm-hmm. If Susan shows up, she has to be Carol Ann Ford. I agree. Nicole also says, bring in Carol Ann Ford, especially so soon after losing William Russell. Totally agree. All right. I want to switch just a little bit to the window. Let's look out the window. Kirsty, what did you think of bringing back this time window from the third Doctor's era?
I liked it. I liked the fact that they actually did it in studio, which is just a phenomenal achievement. I just think they spent too wretchedly long going over the footage. It seemed to take too long. Every time I watch it, it's just like, can we just go a little faster? Because they spent a lot of time looking for her mom, and then the other things kick off. And so it was like, it was a hit because of the fact that they were able to do all that in studio, and they were standing in that, and they could see that, and that was great. But yeah, the scene itself took way too long for all that to happen. And they telegraphed the guy dying so badly. Like, oh, here, I'm a guy. I'm going to go over here and see if I can get another angle. He's going to die. Yeah. Sorry, but that's all that took me out of the moment. But yeah, apart from that, it was great. And the fact that Kate's like, he's like, hey, what about that time window you don't have? What time window? What floor is it on? The 10th floor. And she's just like, okay, fine.
So Clarence, let me ask you a question. Speaking of the time window, did you think, and Lee, I'll point this one to you too. Were the Doctor and Ruby just a little bit too happy to activate the window? it was like, let's start the window.
Well, the Doctor craps on it at first, saying, oh, it's
archaic. Well, this whole thing. Yeah.
You pulled it together somehow, but this thing is a piece of junk.
Yeah.
So I thought all that was fun. I will say on the meta, I think it was a great, and I don't think they did this in green screen. I'm just going off of what it looked like to me. It looked like AR wall technology. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a great use of it, first of all. But, I thought it was a cool thing that a lot of us knew who people may not know a lot about, because you kind of just blew them out. I didn't even realize it was an old thing. We've seen it before.
That it didn't look like that.
No. Yeah. So you just blew my mind on that one. Yeah. So I thought it was a good addition, and I didn't mind so much the methodical nature of it. I know Lee and Kirsty both kind of have problems with it. I kind of felt like the way it was laid out and the back and forth and the acting and the music did make the drawn out scene not feel so bad or not feel so long. But yeah, maybe they were a little too eager to use it. But we're trying to get answers here. So by any means necessary, right? That's kind of.
Oh, yeah. The way I read that was, let's do this thing. Okay, we got this crap technology, but we've got this videotape. We've never put this together before. Let's do it.
And it's the only time that I am down for zoom in enhance is with unit technology.
I literally said that when I had that on the screen. I'm like, ooh, zoom in enhance. Actually, I alert everybody to Connor's comment. Never mind CCTV VHS. I'm going to stick VHS of Pyramids of Mars in that machine. And see what it looks like. I think good.
Yeah.
That is funny.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Ooh. Imagine that. Just go into your show. Damn. Yeah, Doctor Who fans love that.
Yeah.
One thing that was really odd to me was the fact that somebody would keep the grainy CCTV. If you can't see anything on it, I just thought that was an odd thing to keep. But then again, I am someone who has boxes and boxes of VHS tapes that I'll never watch again and don't have a VCR. So who am I to talk? One thing interesting about the CCTV that I saw online, if you take 66.7 meters and turn that into yards, that's 73 yards.
Yep.
Interestingly, 73 yards from a previous episode.
I missed the 66 meters. What was...
They said that the distance from the CCTV camera to the church was 66.7 meters, which then if you convert it to yards, is 73 yards.
As Kate Lethbridge-Stewart did in 73 yards. She mentioned 66.7 meters, yeah.
Speaking of Kate, and Lee, I'll point this one to you first.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Kate in this episode?
My favorite quote that I'll save for later came from her, and I just really really enjoyed her in this episode. And it's glad to see that they didn't ask Gemma to do anything weird with the character this time. She's just her, and she's fully in charge and loves the Doctor. So much, and
wow,
it's just a great. She tolerates the Doctor so much,
and gets pissed off at the Doctor if need be.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Oh yes, you've redecorated. I was just glad to see her.
All right, Clarence. Any thoughts on our dear friend Kate?
Nothing specific, other than there was a great moment when the Doctor, or she mentions her dad telling her all about the Doctor, which I thought was a great touching moment. But on an overall view of her and UNIT as a whole, this might be one of the first times I'm really starting to love UNIT. I feel like the different array of characters there just made them fun and quirky. And I kind of love living with UNIT for probably the first time.
Wingrace says, do we think the 73 yards, 66 meters reference means anything more substantial?
I'm inclined to think not necessarily, because I think it was a reference to the fact that there was no way that they could see her coming away from the church because she was too far away. And it was discussed, it's like, at that distance, you can't actually make anybody out.
Good point.
So it could just be a red herring, because we know that Russell likes to, I mean, heck, you know, he had people thinking Susan was coming back, or, and who knows, she might still.
She may.
And I only say that because I didn't even think Sutek was coming back. So I'm open for anything, to be honest, at this point.
Lei Jin also says the person who dropped Ruby off gave me the 73 yards vibe. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. You can't see her face.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And it glitches. Did you notice that? Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. And when I was writing my notes about this, I realized that we've been referring to that figure as Ruby's mom. And I think now we have to say, we can maybe take that off the table, take woman off the table, take, you know, I said, this ain't their close encounter with that shape.
Right.
I think we can, yeah, we have to lay all those other things down.
Mm-hmm. Ruby could be a seed of Sutek, and that was Sutek.
Exactly.
Well, Lee, we had someone who posted on our Facebook page earlier today, something, if you want to share that, if you were, I think you commented as well. So what was it exactly?
I don't have it handy, but we're talking about Egyptian mythology and the nemesis of Sutek in Egyptian mythology is Isis, who is a bringer of light. And so maybe that's who Ruby is.
Maybe.
Maybe that's going to be the brilliant solution here or something like that. Anyway,
if you just, I have it in front of me. It was from Maddie.
Yes.
Just watched Pyramids of Mars for a second time since Sunday and is having some thoughts on who Ruby could be. Horus is the god of the sun, amongst other things. Sunday, and the stone that held Sutek in place was Ruby Red. Is Ruby Sunday the daughter of Horus sent by the gods in order to stop Sutek? Yeah. Also, the doctor could... Also, the doctor used a time controller from the TARDIS to trap Sutek in the void until he died. Could this be a connection to the TARDIS? TARDIS and be how Sutek has now attached to the TARDIS.
Interesting. So, yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So Nicole says, maybe the hooded person is Ruby herself, like the woman in 73 yards. That's quite a possibility.
That's. I've been wondering about that for a while yet, if that's Ruby, but I don't know.
Well, it seems like we're flooded with different theories and ideas. So speaking of being flooded, our dear Mrs. Flood declines to make a cup of tea for Cherry Sunday, who will never get her cup of tea. This woman never gets her tea.
I made mine before the show.
There you go.
Aha, Cherry.
So,
by the way, I had confessed on your on the show sometime in the past that I consider myself an audio professional and I don't make extraneous noises. So I just want to say the person who's doing that this time is Kirsty. It's not me.
She's the one that's going to make me do all the work. Not me. Yes,
exactly. I am so sorry.
You're right.
I'm just kidding.
It's been a long time. I'm a bit rusty from.
No, that is quite fine. But Chip and Lee is right. He's usually I won't call him the problem child, but the audio child.
Yes,
That sounds like a interesting name, the audio child.
Right.
Well, that's an episode coming. Yeah. Mm. But yeah, getting back to poor Cherry Sunday, will she ever get her tea?
She ever get her tea? Because there's a storm coming. And once again, Mrs. Flood looks at the camera and says, he waits no more. Clarence, what did you think? Is she bad?
You know, I'm inclined to think that Mrs. Flood is. But you also have to think, why is she in the flat right beside Ruby? and has known Ruby seemingly for her whole life. She made a comment about, you know, are you going to ever grow? And she did a little thing. So is she over there watching over Ruby? Did she put Ruby in place to be there?
Yes.
Things that to think about.
Makes her Obi-Wan Kenobi. No. Okay. I'm crossing the streams, aren't I? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
but wasn't Isis like, didn't Isis have something to do with water, floods or something? I want to say maybe. I don't know. Just that's a stretch.
There's a spirit of the Nile. Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That may be another red herring. Something Flood. Interesting that I found, and I will show our friend Tasha from After the Snap Movies and TV. I'll show her comment in just a moment. But the doctor, when explaining regeneration to Ruby, he says something about healing is a reason why you may regenerate, or sometimes to hide themselves away. Then within a few minutes later, we see Mrs. Flood coming in and hanging up her coat, and she says that she's always hiding herself away.
Yeah, we cut straight from one to the other there.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever canonically before talked about regeneration as hiding.
Mm-mm.
No, so the comment sort of stands out like, what? So I don't know.
And
yeah. Is it just Tasha being referential to like the Chameleon Arch and stuff like that? You know, and the master hiding and being Yana.
I thought about the Chameleon Arch when we were testing Susan, when Mel did the groovy thing of getting a sample of Susan and she reads 100% human. I said, Chameleon Arch.
Right.
Because that's the only way, right? I don't know.
But we do know from Fred changed her face to use someone's face that she had seen before and tried out several faces. So theoretically, if Romana/Fred could do that, then, you know, someone else could easily just take up, hey, I'm going to regenerate into a new face. But what Tasha says is Mrs. Flood is probably a Time Lord, and then goes on to say, then there is the issue with Mrs. Flood wearing an identical outfit to who, Clarence?
Clara. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a shocker.
Yeah. Coincidence or?
Maybe it's goblins. Who knows? Coincidence.
I think also there's a great chance that I think that Russell might have like loaded things a bit to keep us busy. If you get what I mean? Like he's done stuff before where he's woven it into the story and we've all caught on. I think that in some way he's peppering in like false leads for us and stuff and things to just get us thinking. And hey, I don't care. It works.
Yeah. No, I'm with you all the way, Kirsty. I think a lot of this is probably red herring, and it's just interesting to keep talking about. And I was thinking about people solving the Susan Triad puzzle, you know, on social media and saying, "Oh, it's TARDIS," so that we could have that moment of everybody in unit going, "Yeah, we know."
Yeah.
Just we got there already.
Yeah.
And what was it, Colonel Ibrahim says? Even I got that.
Yeah. I'm not one of the brainiacs in the room.
The muscles like, yeah, I got that one too. Thanks.
Yeah, that was good. And you know what? One thing that I love that RTD does, whether it's red herring sending you down, you know, the wrong rabbit hole or hiding it in plain sight, because if you're watching on video or on the live stream, you're seeing an image that I've got up of one of the posters. Well, look at the colors behind Doctor and Ruby and go back and watch Pyramids of Mars when the time tunnel that they're trapping him in.
That's right.
Same colors, same look, just updated. So very, very, very interesting.
Well, talking about the obvious lookiness in the face, I mean, Flood River?
Or, as Connor Medlin says, Ronnie is an anagram of rain equals flood.
Flood, yeah.
So, and we heard the Ronnie mentioned in the first episode.
Yes. He did. He name checked the Ronnie. So,
I don't think we'd ever get another actor playing River Song, because I think we've seen all the iterations or something.
But
I mean, it should always look like she should always look like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Except when she's Mel,
Yeah. River is the penultimate Alex Kingston.
Yeah. So there you go.
However you
After the snap, his mentions so... that I just love this comment. Looks... Anything is possible. That's why I love this stuff. I think that's where we're going. It's like, who knows? This is fun. Yeah, exactly. Who knows?
Oh, there we even is. Got that there, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
We even got that too from Susan. Talk to who? Is that it?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Just doctor. Yeah.
Just the doctor. Oh, very enigmatic. Enigmatic.
Oh. There we go.
Yes.
For a second there, my face was big, and I was like, my brain, help.
I'm looking at myself.
I'm looking at myself. I can't do this.
What happened?
Why am I staring?
Speaking of time tunnels, going back to the opening credits, RTD has been saying all along that the sparks mean something from the opening credits. Well, now we know it's because Sutekh was wrapped around the TARDIS, supposedly. Correct?
I had caught something like that, and I didn't really know the reference, but during one of the InVision commentaries, that he actually points it out to somebody. Did you see that on the opening credits? It's like when the title sequence is running. I think he points it out to Stephen Moffat. Mm. And he's like, oh, did you see that? But he doesn't say anything else about it. He's just like, oh, did you see that? Like, and I'm like, what? So there's something.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys, what do you think of it being? We keep saying Sutekh. Lee, what do you think about it being Sutekh? Happy, sad, glad, indifferent? Thoughts?
I was pleased just because since RTD had said no classic Who villains, I was, as I said before, I was tickled that, you know, if you're going to pull somebody out of the 1970s, then that's a good one. That's a lot of fun, you know. And it makes sense because Sutekh is, you know, a G.O.D. and can pretty much do whatever he wants. So that's a big menace to have to deal with. So, you know, it's the level of power is what I like about that.
Clarence, what about you? What do you think?
I really liked it. Although we reviewed the Pyramid of Mars. I didn't remember anything about Sutekh. I was scrambling on the internet, going back and listening to our review and also doing a bunch of Googling to kind of get caught up. I think the aspect of, like Lee said, being a god, an Egyptian god, which I think is a cool thing as well. And I have to give a shout out to Wind Grace's video where he kind of spliced in some Stargate. So Stargate scenes in there. If you're a Stargate fan, you know they deal with the Egyptian gods. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting and cool. And even a point that he brought out in his review, we're left with the question, is this villain or is the revelation of this villain something that is something that, you know, season one, the new Who people are going to really pick up on? Or does it kind of just like go over their head, or does it even matter?
Good question. Yeah. So I have a theory, and let me say it real quick before I forget it. Could it be that in the first episode of the Star Beast, you know, the first 60th episode anniversary special, could it be in the Star Beast when Donna pours coffee on the TARDIS console? That coffee, to me, made a lot more sparks and fire than what I would think it should. Could it be that is when Sutekh actually gets into the TARDIS because some defense goes down? Because wasn't it in Pyramids of Mars when he appeared to the Doctor and Sarah Jane that he was trying to influence the TARDIS or get into the TARDIS? So maybe that's when he got in? Maybe?
Wobbly Yonder is... that's where we get the toy maker reintroduction, because the probability crossing the line thing, right?
Well, the giggle, yes, but he gets the probability in that Wild Blue Yonder episode, the second one, yes.
Yeah. Also, we know that in that episode, it's kind of, I'm not going to say the farthest, but way out there into unknown or space that we haven't been in much in Doctor Who. And couple that maybe with the now in the, help me out here, in the Pyramid of Mars, where did the Doctor send Sutek?
The void.
Is that another dimension? Honest, or is that somewhere out in the middle of
the void?
Yeah. I think it's the space between universes, or
is it the Wild Blue Yonder
space, or pretty much where they were close to, I think, in the Wild Blue Yonder, the nothing.
Yeah.
So bringing in a quote from Nicole, I thought the Sutek reveal fell flat, and I didn't like the CGI version of him as much as the old mass version, not keen on him being a god, just not a, a powerful alien. I kind of liked the dog look. I still wish and hope we see the, wasn't it supposed to be a dog, basically?
Yeah.
But I was hoping that we would see something updated similar to what we saw sitting on the throne. That would have been kind of cool. What do you guys think?
Well, I think this is just the first iteration of what we're going to see, hopefully by the end of the season.
I think this is this form that we're seeing is like the dog form that was coming through the tunnel in Pyramids of Mars, you know? But yeah, I think this is just the start. We haven't seen Sutek yet.
All right, so I'm going to do a round table real quick before we get into our favorites. And my round table is going to be just one name for everybody. Who is Ruby? Clarence, who is Ruby?
I think she's going to be somebody that is going to save everybody. I don't know how that plays into what we've seen so far. I don't know where the breadcrumbs lead exactly. But I think that, you know, if looking at this Egyptian mythology, I think somehow she's going to be the one to save everybody.
All right. Lee, who is Ruby?
I agree that she is some kind of a hope. Maybe that's the spirit of Christmas.
No.
All right.
No, I don't think that either. But she is Isis or some, you know, manifestation of Horus somehow or something like that. And the only reason she's here is because Sutek was becoming it. That's
all right.
It's all leading to here.
I like that. Kirsty, who is Ruby?
I think she is an unwitting pawn in Sutek's plans. but ends up foiling his plans in the end, because she's just, you know, it's like when the maestro has her and says, and they say that she has this song in her heart that, you know, and it's like link to that point in time. And I think Sutek's using her, but in the end, it'll be his undoing because he won't, you know.
I'm going to start this question with you, Kirsty. Who is Ruby's mom?
I don't know. I really don't. I don't even want to hazard a guess because, like, everything just sounds kind of like, yeah, I'm glad for the guessing, but I'm not going to feed into it. It could be anybody at this point.
I respect that. Who is Ruby's mom, Lee?
Mrs. Santa Claus, I think. I don't have the foggiest idea.
All right. Clarence, who is Ruby's mom?
I don't know if Mrs. Flood is her mom, her the person watching over her, or I think she has something to do with it, but I don't think we've gotten enough clues to kind of figure it out at this point. I know we're going to think it's brilliant once we get that reveal, or at least I hope we do think it's brilliant, but I just hope the breadcrumbs have led us there properly to whatever the actual reveal is.
Yeah.
So I'm going to answer both of those questions at once. I don't know who her mom is, but I think we will find out who her mom is thanks to the Doctor. And I think whoever Ruby really is has more power than a normal being, whatever she winds up being, whether she's a Time Lord, whether she's a foundling from wherever the Doctor's from, whatever it is, I think she will thank him for whatever he's helped her reveal. I think she will be instrumental in reuniting him with Susan. That's what I think. I think she will do something. Mm-hmm. As you help me find my family, I'm going to help you find yours. Wow. And that'll be the end of the episode, is the reuniting with Susan. I also have another theory, really, really quick before we move on, that Susan will then regenerate and Verada, who will be coming on next, will be the new Susan. If it happens, that would be cool. You'd have the Doctor and Susan together again. That would be cool.
If
you already have a name for the new companion?
I don't think so.
The actor, yeah.
Yeah. So she's not playing the same character that she played previously. Right. Now, I think they did release a name, but just like a first name that was honestly kind of generic and that I don't even remember what was. So I'm wondering if that was just throwing out a name just to throw out a name. But with that being said, if you are in the chat and you would like to rate this episode from 1 to 5, you can go ahead and start doing that. But for now, let's start with our favorite quote, our favorite scene, actually. Sorry. Favorite scene. Hmm. Lee Shackelford, favorite scene.
Well, inside the time window, I was riveted by Ruby's close encounter with the woman shape mother, whatever, who left her on the doorstep. I think Millie's performance is 9/10 of what I found so compelling about that. But that's what stands out in my memory about the whole episode. Is that, yeah.
Okay. Kirsty, favorite scene.
I'm going to pick when the Doctor and Kate were having their quiet little moment. I just loved the fact that they kind of took that time, because the Doctor's interacting with her before have kind of glossed over and been very kind of impersonal about the Brigadier and his daughter and that. And that was just a nice little thing, like, oh, he used to, and I sat there and his eyes, and like, I just loved, you could just imagine Nick Courtney sitting there, mm-hmm. especially since he'd been on so many videos and stuff and at conventions telling stories. And you just imagine all those people just sitting there thinking of Nick Courtney telling a story about Doctor Who. And just, mm-hmm. yeah, it was just nice. And then we get this, you get pulled out of it at the end with the little like, but a granddaughter? Really? Never heard about that one. It was just that nice little dip in. And then, yeah, so it was just really handled well.
Awesome. All right, Clarence, favorite scene.
Can I have two?
You most certainly can.
First, let me say, any scene with Morris Gibbons in it.
Oh, yes.
That guy was amazing. Played by Lenny Rush. Yeah. Was there some more to that story? Was he a part of the Space Babies or something? I'm a little confused because he mentioned a passing asteroid, but that was a ship on Space Babies.
Well, yeah. I think what you're thinking of him, he was originally supposed to either play the Vorses or play one of the babies.
Mm.
And he was selected to this. Just as a side note, Shirley Ann Bingham is not gone for good. I just don't think that the actor was available for to record this particular episode. That's why Shirley is not in this episode.
Also, I'd actually heard that that like Lenny's appearance in this is kind of like a guest appearance, and she will be back.
Yep.
For the rest of the run, she's still there. He's just like on temporary assignment to right. unit.
Yeah. Everybody goes to Geneva.
Right. He had either been at the read through for Space Babies, and they were just like, this is just a shame that we only are going to be using his voice. Mm. So let's put him in an episode. So they put him in an episode.
Yeah. He was amazing.
Essentially the story about that.
Well, I loved him. So, yeah.
All right. Yeah. So Clarence, what was your other one?
Oh, my other was I'm call it the Kylo Ren moment, where the Doctor starts beating on the elevator or the wall when he was really mad. You know, that reminded me of Kylo Ren with his lightsaber just tearing up that wall in The Force Awakens. So, yeah, I really love that scene as well.
All right. So it's interesting that was your second. I just need to be quiet since that was your second one, because that was my favorite scene, was the Doctor and Mel in the hallway. I love that. And for all the times that people were saying the Doctor, you know, was too soft-hearted and too kind-hearted for the 15th Doctor, that was an angry 15th Doctor.
Yeah.
So I really, really, really liked that. All right. So onward and upward, favorite quote. Clarence, I'm going to swing it back to you. Favorite quote.
Oh, man. It was the part, and I'm trying to get the actual quote, but it was the part of the show when Ruby's mother was trying to get upstairs, and Kate makes the comment, "Ruby, this is gold security establishment. Even the prime minister can't walk in a unit." And then Morris is like, "Especially the prime minister." Yeah, I thought that was really funny.
All right, and I want to make sure I don't forget something. But favorite quote, Kirsty, what say you?
Oh, there's so many actually. It's like I've been trying to mull over it. Come back to me.
All right, Lee Shackelford, what say you?
As complicated as their relationship is, I love Kate saying, "For what it's worth, I think you bring joy."
Mm-hmm. And hugs.
Okay. I like that quote, Lee Shackelford. "For what it's worth, I think you bring joy," because that was mine. Yay. Great minds.
I finally got it. I finally got it, Kyle. "I bring Sutek's gift of death."
Yeah.
That was
there you cool. go.
Shivers. Yes.
Yes. Classic Doctor Who ending. And let me say, it's been a long time when I've thought that the makeup and the prosthetic is super creepy. Mm-hmm. The on both of them, you know, Harbinger as well as on Susan Twist, that was freaking scary looking, especially Susan Twist.
H. Harbinger, really?
Yes.
Yeah, that one was a bit cringe.
All right. Final rating. Lee Shackelford, I'll start with you. Final rating. What say ye?
Well, like I said, when we began, I enjoyed so much of this. There's so many moments, but I just feel like it took a long time to get to them. So I don't know. I'm giving it 3 out of 5 classic Who villains returning.
Okay. 3.5 classic Who villains returning.
3 out of 5.
Oh, 3 out of 5.
Not 3 point.
Okay. Kirsty, what say ye?
I'm going to give it a 4 because while I love the villain reveal and everything, there was a lot of introductions at the beginning that were unnecessary because we loaded up the cast with a guest star. We got Mal in the Wings, who should have been up first, and Harbinger. And it's like, there was just like so many people to introduce at the beginning. It was just like, why are we doing all of this setup? And then, of course, the just some long scenes that I think just could have made it a bit tighter. But we don't know what's coming next. And, you know, it's one of those things with a two-parter that you've got to really see what the other half's like to see the whole story. But yeah, I go with a 4.
All right. Good deal. Clarence, what say you?
I'm going to give it 4.25 hopes that we see a Ruby and Rose crossover, or not crossover, spinoff out of 5.
All right.
It's a good name for the show. Yeah.
The Legend of Ruby and Rose.
Right. Not to be confused with Sapphire and Steel.
All right. Before I get to my own, I'm going to read the reviews from everyone in the chat. We're going to start with After the Snap Movies and TV. 5 out of 5 cups of tea. Always like hearing from Tasha because she's generally always right. And she'll know why she's always right because she agrees with somebody. But anyway, 3.75 time windows out of 5 for Harold Katz. Monty says 5 all the way. Keep it up, team. Janet Hall says 2 snowflakes out of 5. Connor says 3.5 dog collars out of 5. Lei Jin, 3.75. No T for you out of 5. Good answer, Lei Jin. Like that. Maddie Dilly says 100 spooky puppy dogs out of 100. Can you tell I loved it?
Woof, woof.
Woof, woof. And then we've got, let's see here, 3.8 vanishing lamppost from Ian Williams. Awesome, awesome. And Monty says in a very good voice of Homer Simpson, "Doh, I thought you meant rate the podcast." Oh, cool. But the episode, he only rated 2 out of 5. Tad gives 4.997 groaning tortoises. Wingrace, 4 grandchildren born before my children out of 5. And Nicole gives 1 groveling insects out of 5. And like I said, I like Tasha's comment because I gave it, and also Lei Jin, 5 not happening cups of tea out of 5. Because I just enjoyed it. So, Kirsty, thank you so much for joining us. This was awesome having you on. Glad to have you here. Everyone in the chat, thank you for being here, watching the live stream. And for everyone listening to us later in audio, thank you also for listening. Be sure to subscribe. Be sure to like. Leave us a review. We will post it and comment it on a future broadcast. Again, thank you for being here. I hope the next time we chat, I will have seen Susan Foreman again. But as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.